sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list on The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Hi there, and a good Sunday morning to you on this 20th day of August. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell here. It's the best of Downtown, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Our weekly look back at some of our favorite conversations from the last week or so, and we're going typically downtown eclectic this morning as we talk about tomorrow's solar eclipse, the recent lobster boat races, the 40th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, and a little basketball mixed in as well. On the program today, we talk with Sean Lash of the Amera Astronomy Center, Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation, John Corrales, RedsArmy.com, and the Locked On Celtics podcast, and NPR Weekend Edition contributor Colin Fleming. Guests of the show come your way always in the G&M Family Market phone line. G&M on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Open every day of the week, 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. Let's get things rolling. A very special celestial event tomorrow. A total solar eclipse that a good portion of the country will get a chance to see in something close to what's called totality. For us here, not that much, but still a very interesting event nonetheless. We had a chance to talk about it the other day on the program with Sean Lash from the Amera Astronomy Center at the University of Maine. You're in demand, making the rounds everywhere, Sean.
Yeah, this week has been quite busy, to say the least.
So what is it that makes this upcoming eclipse such a special event here in America in particular?
Sure. So this is the first time since 1918 that the entire lower 48 states gets to see an eclipse all at the same time. So we've had eclipses, of course, that have passed through a portion of the U.S., but this one, the path of totality, starts over on the West Coast and all the way to the East Coast. So it starts over in Oregon, goes all the way through South Carolina. Now, you have to be in that 75-mile-wide strip to see it in totality, of course. And if you're on either side of that, then you see a partial solar eclipse, which is what will be seen here in Maine.
And all this possible because of a rare situation where, and I'm sure I'm oversimplifying this, but essentially the position of the sun and the moon, despite the fact that the sun is so much larger than the moon, yeah. But the mathematical distance is just perfect that it creates this opportunity and an illusion, in a sense, of the moon covering the sun.
Yeah, Earth is just the right distance from the sun, and the moon is just the right distance away from the Earth, that the angular diameters of the two appear the same. Basically, the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun, but the sun is 400 times farther away. So when they get in the right alignment, it appears that the two are equal. And we have solar eclipses, of course, at new moon, which is what we'll have on Monday. And then there are lunar eclipses at full moon when the moon passes through the Earth's shadow. So we get these two different types of eclipses. And even though we have full moon and new moon every month, the moon's orbit is tilted compared to the Earth's orbit. And so you have to have where the moon's orbit is crossing the Earth's orbit at a node for an eclipse to happen. So we get solar eclipses about every year and a half. But, you know, the positioning on Earth is different. So, for instance, this year it will be here in 2019. If you want to see a total solar eclipse, you'd have to go to Chile or Argentina. In 2024, for those of us who like the cold weather like we have here in Maine, we can go to Antarctica to see a total solar eclipse. But then in 2021, excuse me, in 2024, there is a path of totality that makes its way through Maine.
Ooh.
So April 8th of 2024, and it won't be total here in Bangor or Orono, but the path, the center line passes actually straight through Baxter State Park. So that'll be a good
wow.
place to be.
And I read a social media message the other night from Neil deGrasse Tyson saying that, you know, we know all of this and we've predicted this for a long time. Because of science. Science actually does know some things.
Yeah, science tends to work, as we like to say.
Not everybody buys into
it. The whole bit with science is that it is based on observation, predictability, and repeatability. So, yeah, when things we do things in science because they're repeatable. We've known about eclipses for centuries, going as far back as even Stonehenge and before. Stonehenge actually was an observatory for eclipses, if you will. You would watch where the sun and moon would rise through the henges, the three-sided gates, and you could figure out when that node or crossing point would be and when you would have solar eclipses.
And of course, those people who could predict those things in those times were believed to have some sort of special powers as well.
Yeah, at that time, you know, a lot of the folks who, astronomers were often sort of the advisors to kings and rulers. And sometimes it was good and sometimes not so good. So in China, for instance, there have been some recorded instances where if you were an astronomer for the emperor and you could predict eclipses accurately, you would get your weight in gold, which, of course, is kind of nice. The downside was if you failed to predict an eclipse, you would lose your head.
That's a downside, fairly significant downside.
So, but again, that hasn't happened recently, but that was in ancient China, and they did keep accurate records of eclipses, and that did happen at least in one ancient eclipse at that time.
We're talking with Sean Latch from the Amera Astronomy Center at the University of Maine. So for those people in that totality zone, what will it look like leading up to the total eclipse, and then what will they see?
So leading up to the total eclipse, they'll get a partial eclipse, basically. So they'll see what we see here, but it is that those moments of totality that really are special. And I always tell folks, if you've never seen a total solar eclipse, you owe it to yourself to make sure you see one at least once during your lifetime. Once you do, it's something that really is almost undescribable. It's really special. The sky is a strange color. You don't get complete darkness, but you get twilight in 360 degrees. It almost looks like there's a hole in the sky the way the sun, the solar corona comes out from the sun. It just really is amazing. You'll see, you know, some of the brighter stars and planets. Birds and animals pay attention because the temperature drops. Winds tend to, you know, pick up a little bit. It's really an amazing thing. It's one of the most amazing things in all nature you'll ever see.
And where we are in the partial eclipse, is it still a good idea to use special glasses to look at it?
You have to. So the only time it's safe to look at a total solar eclipse of the sun is during totality, you know, when you can see that. So since we're outside the path, we only can see a partial, you need to wear special glasses or solar filters or do pinhole projection. The sun is no more powerful on a day of an eclipse, but humans tend not to stare at the sun. Unless there's a solar eclipse, then they want to see what's happening, and your eye doesn't have pain sensors, and you'll burn the retina, and that can do permanent damage. So I tell folks, we do want people to get out and view the eclipse, but please make sure you do so safely, because your eyes are too important for everyday life.
There are going to be some special events, several events coming up to talk about this and share more information with people.
We'll also be doing viewing of the eclipse from 1 to 4 on Eclipse Day, which is Monday, the 21st, coming up here at the planetarium. And we'll have, we'll have solar telescopes, we'll have eclipse glasses, we'll have pinhole projection, we'll basically have all the different safe ways to view the eclipse. Then we have our regular planetarium program for the month of August. The Friday night show is, of course, Totality, Exploring Eclipses. That takes a look at that. So we have that show Friday, and we'll be showing that twice on Monday as well at 10 and 11:30 a.m. So just prior to the eclipse, people can come and learn about it and then hopefully go and view it if the weather cooperates.
And you mentioned the history and historical significance. How have people viewed these events in the past?
Yeah, eclipses have been really something that has had a great effect on human history. There's been some wars that have started and stopped because of eclipses. It was something that early humans often feared and were afraid of, because darkness in the middle of the day, you know, people thought the world was coming to an end. Learning to predict them was again very important. And like you say, there were times when the people who could predict them were thought to be, you know, have special powers, or have magic, but it's really not magic. It's just a matter of, you know, learning the cycle and then keeping track of it. But yeah, people have paid, you know, significance to them, and not just solar eclipses, lunar eclipses too. There's a story about Christopher Columbus, who wasn't always necessarily the nicest of guys. And during one of his second voyages to the Americas, they ran out of food. And he had mistreated the Native Americans on his first visit, and they didn't want to help him. And he threatened to turn the moon to blood the next night if they didn't help him, because he knew there was a lunar eclipse. And sure enough, it turned deep reddish brown because it was a lunar eclipse. And they thought he was some kind of god and gave him all the food that he wanted. So He used it to his advantage, not in a nice way, of course, but so even lunar eclipses have, you know, over time been something. Now, most people see several lunar eclipses during their lifetime because as the moon passes through the Earth's shadow, that's visible from half of the Earth at a time. If it's with a solar eclipse, you have to be in that very special path, and that changes over time. There was a total solar eclipse. Last time it happened here in Maine was in 1963. So that's quite some time ago.
I vaguely remember that as a small child. And you're going to be heading, though, out to see it in totality. You're going out to Idaho.
Yeah, I'm headed to Idaho, trying to get to, of course, the best weather prospects, you might say. Mm. So that's why, you know, people ask, why are you going out to Idaho? Well, because, yeah, that's where the weather is supposed to be driest and clearest, typically, for the eclipse. So hoping to see it there.
And the path, it's not a straight line across America, right?
It's sort of... It kind of curves down a bit, yeah. It's so, you know, it depends on the position of the sun, earth, and moon during that nodal crossing. So, it starts up in Oregon, and then it will finish in South Carolina. It sort of diagonally, you know, crosses the United States. And the one that comes through Maine, too, it'll come through Maine and it'll go down through Mexico. So that will sort of be a different sort of angle. There's actually a crossing point in southern Illinois that's going to get two eclipses in a seven-year time period, which is really rare.
That's very cool. Now, these celestial events for all times have inspired people and left people in awe. This is a tough time in America, to say the least, these days. Is it too much to think that something like this can maybe bring people together a little bit and remind them that we're all passengers on this pretty small planet in the middle of a very, very big universe?
Yeah, it's one of the things that we astronomers always hope will happen with these things. They, like I say, totality is one of the most spectacular things you'll ever see. And some people actually will claim it's a very spiritual thing, so in terms of seeing it, because it really, especially in totality, again, the partial phases, they're nice, but it's not like seeing it in totality. This will be my fourth one, and I can say each one is special. And, the one that I saw the last time I saw one was in 2006, and, my wife was with me. And one of the things she's a psychologist, and, you know, she was on this trip with me, and she had to hear all these astronomers talk about how wonderful eclipses are. And by the end of the week, she was pretty sick of it. She's like, I know it's going to be kind of cool, but I don't think it's going to be all that. Well, the day of, I'm going to get in trouble if she hears this, but the day of course, we went out, and we were in Libya for the eclipse, and the partial phases started. And she's like, oh, this is okay. And during totality, I looked over at her and she was crying. And I was like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I just never imagined it would be so beautiful. So it really does affect people. And there have been people who, once they see a total solar eclipse, then they want to go and see more and they start to chase them. So I had to convince her to go to that one because of where it was located, of course. but that was before there was weird stuff happening in that part of the world. This year, you know, when I said, hey, there's a total eclipse, do you want to go? And she's like, yeah. And she didn't even ask where. She's like, you know, and she doesn't pay attention to where it's going on anymore. But after seeing one, she definitely wanted to see another.
But whether it's faith or whether it's science or whether it's a combination of the two that people believe in, it's such a wonderful event, and it brings all of the cosmic calculations together, and it's such a wonderful thing. And it, to me, it provides you with a sense of order in the universe when there often is none.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. I mean, a lot of folks think that, you know, things in the sky are random. They really aren't. I mean, you know, there are long patterns of some things, but really what we see in the sky is a very predictable, stable thing, that's why we've been able to predict these things for years. There's actually what they call a canon of eclipses. One of my friends at NASA Goddard, who's retired from there, Fred Espenak, he's written a whole canon that looks at eclipses going forward to, you know, like 3,000, the year 3,000, as well as looking back at ones over time, because again, you know, people have known about them and do predict them. And it is one of those things. I think it is special for people to think about that Earth is, this is another sense of, you know, hopefully helping people, regardless of what side of the fence you might be on in terms of science, religion, whatever, that Earth is in a special place. Earth is the only place in our solar system that gets total solar eclipses. There are other planets that have moons, but those moons aren't the right distance where it will, you know, cover the sun and have the same angular diameter. So Earth is a very special place for that, and I would think that regardless of what side of the fence you might come down on, that you'd think it makes sense to take care of our planet and preserve it. And that's something also I hope that when people see these wonderful events, they'll keep in mind as well.
Absolutely. So a prime viewing time for us in the Bangor area?
So the eclipse will start around 1:35 here in Bangor. Maximum coverage will be at 2:46 p.m., and then it will finish at 3:55 in the afternoon. And like I say, up at the planetarium, we'll have viewing from 1 to 4 o'clock, to help folks with that and to make sure that they view safely, which is also key.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Sean, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a wonderful trip to Idaho.
Thank you. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that clear weather.
Sean Lash of the Emera Astronomy Center at the University of Maine here on the Best of Downtown. A quick break, and on the other side, some insight on the Celtics. Their schedule just released. John Corrales talks about that with us next on Downtown.
Worried about buying a pre-owned vehicle? Experience the pre-owned difference with Quirk Auto Group. Every pre-owned vehicle from Quirk comes with a Carfax vehicle history report, a Quirk certified pre-owned inspection, a 3-month, 3,000-mile limited warranty, and state inspections for the life of the vehicle. That's the Quirk pre-owned difference. Experience it for yourself at more than 10 statewide locations. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. QuirkAuto.com. Wholesale vehicles excluded from the 3-month, 3,000-mile limited warranty and main state inspections.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Dunnett's Appliance and Mattress has been family-owned and operated since 1948, selling all major brands of appliances. Stop in at 63 Washington Street, Penobscot Plaza, Bangor, and find out about the Dunnett's Advantage. At Dunnett's, they'll price match any local competitor, and they also offer special financing options. Of course, Dunnett's services what they sell with their own parts and service department, and they offer free delivery to most areas. Come on into Dunnett's, 63 Washington Street in Bangor, and see the difference you get with a local, family-owned and operated business. Dunnett's has done it again.
Green Acres Kennel Shop is your pet's home away from home. In fact, Green Acres has been voted the best kennel in the Bangor region every year since 2002 and one of the top 15 kennels in New England in 2016. With award-winning and knowledgeable staff and owners that live on site, you can be confident your pet is in good hands. Not only does Green Acres provide top-notch boarding for your dogs and cats, but they have also been voted the Bangor area's best pet groomer, dog trainer, and best pet store for the past several years. Located conveniently at 1653 Union Street in Bangor, make Green Acres Kennel your pet's home away from home. Visit them online today at greenacreskennel.com for more information or call them at 945-6841. Don't forget to ask about their rewards and frequent buyer programs.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
Biking season is here, and the only way to be sure that you're road or trail ready is to bring your bike to Slipping Gears Cycling, Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts at 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor before prime riding season slips away. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates, shop in person and online at slippinggears.com. Back on the Best of Downtown, brought to you by Quirk Auto, Quirk Auto Group. It's your car, find it at Quirk. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell here. Time to talk some Celtics basketball. The schedule is out, and we caught up on that and more with our friend John Corrales of RedsArmy.com and the Locked On Celtics podcast. Well, let's talk about the schedule that was released yesterday, and I guess we always fall back on what Larry Bird used to say about the schedule.
Yeah, 41 home, 41 away. except this year there's that one away on January 11th in London that does create a little bit of a quirk because the Celtics essentially have kind of an all-star break before the all-star break. They've got 4 days off before that game, 4 days off after, so they'll be out there. They'll have an opportunity to get acclimated to the time change. They'll do a lot of promotional stuff for the NBA to really pump up the marketing. That's part of why they're out there. But that really creates the situation where the Celtics have 40 of their 82 games, just about half of their schedule, before the calendar year 2017 is done. So that means January, February, March, April, another 4 months to get 42 games in. They're really front-loaded, and I'm wondering if that's going to hurt the Celtics, because new guys, obviously Hayward, Morris, new guys to come in here and get acclimated and get used to the system. There's going to be a lot of games in rapid fire over the first few months, and I just wonder if it's going to take the Celtics a little while before they figure out the exact rotations that are going to work, and if that's going to depress their win total a little bit.
A lot of games right out of the gate, and along the way, what is it, 14 back-to-backs?
Yeah, which is actually not bad, considering the in the past they've had up to 20-plus. The league has done a lot to reduce the back-to-backs. They started the season a week earlier. Those 7 days really go a long way in preventing those back-to-backs and those stretches of four games in five nights, which have been completely eliminated across the league. So the Celtics will have their stretches of a lot of games, 5 games in 7 days. They'll have rapid-fire games, you know, play, day off, whatever. But the league has done a pretty good job. Not perfect, but the league has done a pretty good job of reducing the rest. And we're going to see a lot less of teams having to rest stars on these big national TV games.
Is it a measure of how highly regarded the Celtics are by the league itself and by the networks, too, that they not only open the NBA season but get themselves a Christmas Day game?
Yeah, I think the Celtics are one of those really high-rating teams, especially when they're good. The Celtics, they draw pretty much whenever. I know it's weird with the Lakers. They're not very good, but they still get 35 national TV games. The Celtics have 34. But when the Celtics are good, they're going to get those big marquee games. And, yeah, Christmas, that 5:30 slot against the Wizards is going to be a really fun one. And I love that time slot, not too late. You get to maybe go in for seconds, or maybe you're polishing off dessert, get to watch the game in peace. It's really nice. Opening up the season, kicking it off against the Cavaliers. By the way, opening night in Cleveland, their only trip to Cleveland, which is a weird quirk. And like I said, 34 national TV games, a ton of TNT, a ton of ESPN, 4 ABC games, so, and the London game. So that shows what the league thinks about the Boston Celtics. They're putting them basically front and center, trailing only really the Warriors and the Cavs and the Rockets of the group.
So we should feel pretty good about things, is what we're saying at this juncture of the offseason.
Yeah, considering mid-August, the way things are shaping up, you know, like I said, except for kind of wondering how that early tight schedule is going to shape up, I like the way things are going. I like this team. I've been doing a lot of looking at how Gordon Hayward is going to fit. He's just such a versatile guy that he's going to really, I think people are going to be surprised. You might not realize exactly the type of player we're getting in Hayward, but he's really, really good. He can score in almost any way possible. And everything is just kind of lining up. This is going to be a really, really fun season.
And Hayward already making overtures and making himself part of the scene through his social media work.
Yeah, he's out there. He's not shy. He knows how to play the game. And I think a lot of players, a lot of fans are going to like him as a player, but also as a guy that you can follow, and he's a big video gamer. So if you're a young fan that's totally into video games and Call of Duty and whatever else, this is where I show my age. I don't know a lot of the names of the games, but he's a guy that you definitely want to follow because he has that pulse.
I felt pretty good the other day. I tweeted something. I think it was in response to Charlottesville, but it got a like from Anna Horford, so I thought I'd done okay.
Yes. She's a great one to follow, Al Horford's sister. Not his wife.
No.
A common mistake people
right.
make on Twitter. It's his sister. Don't say your husband.
John Corrales talking Celtics with us. He does it every Tuesday afternoon at 4:30 here on the program. This is the best of downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, we're going for a ride in a lobster boat. Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation on the recent lobster boat races down in Jonesport. This is The Pulse, AM 620 WZON.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Whatever you're looking for, G&M Family Market has got what you need. They're on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. They have fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, a Dunkin' Donuts right there, and an Amato's as well. And if there's something you can't find, just ask, and they'll make every effort to get it for you next time. It's G&M Family Market, Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. They're open every day from 6 in the morning until 9 p.m.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Back on the best of downtown for your Sunday morning. One of our favorite guests on the show, Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation, who was on a different sort of boat than this. I don't know, that would have changed the whole complexion of things.
Yeah, it would have been even faster, I think.
Yeah, see those lobstermen out there wearing their pastels. The lobster boat races at Jonesport a few weeks back. Charlotte did a wonderful piece for SB Nation and a mini documentary as well. We chatted about her with that, about her last week here on Downtown. I saw the social media post about your lunch today was certainly better than anything we had here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wrote this article about the lobster boat races that take place up and down the coast of Maine, but I focused on the Jonesport ones, and the Maine lobster industry was pretty into it. So Maine Lobster sent us lobster rolls at the office, and it was a pretty good Monday lunch, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it looked very good. Well, let's talk about that piece. It really was a wonderful, wonderful story on the lobster boat races. What inspired you to come up here and spend a week hanging out on lobster boats with some very interesting people?
Yeah, I grew up spending summers in Rockport, Maine, and I taught sailing for about 8 years. And worked on, you know, schooners that would take tourists out, and I crewed on racing boats. And the boat club that I taught sailing at was, you know, the not fancy one in Rockport. It was Rockport Boat Club. You know, it was not where you went if you wanted your kids to be like, you know, the hobnobbing in the Hamptons. And it was this tiny little shack next to the fishing dock. I got to know some of the fishermen, and I've always been fascinated by these races that they compete in up and down the coast, where they, you know, trick out their boats with hundreds, if not thousands, of extra horsepower, and just, you know, go as fast as they can in this drag race, and they'll get up to, like, you know, between 40 and 70 miles an hour, which in a lobster boat is a pretty significant speed. So I wanted to tell this story because I didn't see anything sort of comprehensive on it, and I didn't see any good videos. So we produced a short documentary on it too, and it was just really it was a pretty wild experience. Being up there.
Well, and you met some incredible people as well, from Doug Dodge to the Alleys. And of course, as you mentioned in the piece, it's Alleys, Beals, Carvers, and then the occasional immigrant who shows up there. But fascinating people to read about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was really moved by how they invited me into their lives and really let me know them. You know, I think that being able to tell people's stories is something that I take a responsibility I take very seriously and something that feels very precious to me in some ways. And so, you know, I never want to sugarcoat anything, but I hope to get at a truth. And, you know, they're very generous with me, so I really appreciated that.
And not to oversimplify it here, but in many ways, is it hanging on to a way of life that is certainly changing due to all kinds of factors, technology, but changing population trends as well?
Yeah, you know, it ended up being, you know, I think it was somewhat sad to me because the race is, you know, attendance is falling. It's not quite as big a deal as it used to be when this was, you know, the event of the summer. And I think technology does have a lot to do with that. You know, you grow up having access at your fingertips to the rest of the world and think, oh, okay, well, I could go there, and kids are moving away. And as opposed to when, you know, ways of life were probably a little more not compartmentalized, but, you know, that's what you did. You stuck around. And I think that is playing a significant role in the fact that these things aren't the as huge as they once were. But, you know, the industry, the lobster industry, is doing well. So it's a really interesting sort of cultural moment to me up there.
Well, it was fascinating, too, to read because there were some clear political viewpoints from some of the people involved that you spoke with there. But the wonderful thing about immersing yourself in the community like that and getting to know people is, in these times when everybody's at each other's throats over politics, you realize that, yeah, you know, it's still possible to disagree vehemently with somebody's politics, but still like them as a person and respect them and find common ground in other areas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot, especially after Charlottesville, how I think that there is a right and a wrong side these days. You know, I think that it's sort of, if you can talk to people and have a dialogue with people about, you know, hey, this is why, you know, this is why this might be a problem, or, you know, if you can't denounce Nazis, that's not great. And, you know, of course, that none of it didn't get to that point in the piece, but, you know, I think that if we can break down some of these barriers and talk to each other, that's kind of it's imperative. You know, that's going to be where we can save ourselves, hopefully. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that a lesson can be like, hey, you can talk to each other and have a dialogue, if that's at all possible.
You mentioned the video, the mini documentary. That was excellent as well. Who are the folks who helped you out with that?
Yeah, so I two of my good friends at work who are just wildly talented, Alex Hawley and Adam Porter. Adam directed it and edited it and made it just this, you know, this really beautiful, dynamic arc of a story. And it was just it was a real pleasure to be able to produce this and, you know, find these people and do the reporting and bring these guys along and have them capture the essence of it so perfectly. So I could not be more thrilled. And you know, one of my friends who lives in Maine was at the bus stop in Portland and texted me to say that a guy who looked like he could have been a lobsterman, he had, you know, some equipment with him, was watching it on his phone. So that was pretty exciting.
Well, we posted the link to both the video and your wonderful story on our Facebook page as well. You can find it on SB Nation, too. We're talking with Charlotte Wilder here on Downtown. It was a treat to hear you this weekend, Saturday morning, on Only a Game with Bill Littlefield. And look, there are some things we can all agree on, Charlotte, and I think Jay Cutler might be one of those, right?
I think Jay Cutler's face of just eternal disappointment is something that everyone can enjoy. But yeah, no, it's always fun talking to Bill. And my dad texted me, you know, I've written stuff. I've sort of been in this world for a little while now, but he texted me and he goes, NPR, only a game. You made it. And I was like, yeah, if that's the benchmark, then I'm a superstar.
I feel that because my in-laws, it'll be like, oh, who'd you have on the show? Oh, you know, oh, gee, we had Bob Ryan. We had Bryan Cranston. Yeah, we had this one. But when we had Bill Littlefield on the show, well, I had made it. Yeah. That was it.
Yep, he's a hero, that man.
And you also talked about,
hero.
No question about it, you also talked about this ridiculous McGregor-Mayweather thing coming up. And isn't it sad that nobody's spending the money for these tickets? I can't believe it.
I know, right? No, I'm pretty excited about it. That if they're not buying them, I mean, I've thought the whole thing was a little ridiculous the whole time, but you know, people are excited and it's a spectacle and everyone loves watching that. So, you know, we'll see if McGregor can learn how to box in what, a few weeks.
What could go wrong? I think it's important for people to take a stand, but you know, sometimes you get new information and you move, you evolve, as the politicians say. And Charlotte, it appears that that's happened with you, that you've modified your stance apparently on Jumbotron proposals.
I once wrote that no one should ever propose at a sporting event ever. Never on a Jumbotron. Like, just don't do it. But then I recently saw a picture of this guy proposing to a woman at a Dolphins preseason game. And I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Like, you are taking the worst possible way to propose and doing it in the worst possible way. And it's so totally outrageous to me that it's wildly endearing. And I hope more people propose at preseason Dolphins games, because what could be better? I mean, I would say yes.
Oh, just for that? Yeah, just for the effort, the fact that you did it in that venue, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, not only did you get me to go to a Dolphins preseason game with you, but, you know, you thought to bring the ring here, so let's do it, buddy.
And every time you're on, a new layer is peeled in the 6 degrees of Charlotte Wilder, that you seem to know everybody that we know. When you were tweeting back and forth with our friend Stephanie Stradley, the Houston lawyer, and we use her as a Deflategate expert.
Oh, Steph, I love Steph. We spent some time with each other in Houston when I was down there for the Super Bowl. She's so wonderful.
That's great. Charlotte, always a treat for us to talk with you. A really, really wonderful work on the lobster boat race story. Everybody, go check it out on SB Nation. Charlotte Wilder, thanks as always for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich. Great to talk to you.
That's Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, 40th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley this week. Is he still the king of rock and roll? Does he still matter? We talked about that and more with Colin Fleming of NPR's Weekend Edition. You'll hear it next on Downtown.
Worried about buying a pre-owned vehicle? Experience the pre-owned difference with Quirk Auto Group. Every pre-owned vehicle from Quirk comes with a Carfax vehicle history report, a Quirk certified pre-owned inspection, a 3-month, 3,000-mile limited warranty, and state inspections for the life of the vehicle. That's the Quirk pre-owned difference. Experience it for yourself at more than 10 statewide locations. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. QuirkAuto.com. Wholesale vehicles excluded from the 3-month, 3,000-mile limited warranty and main state inspections.
Road bike, mountain bike, hybrid, recumbent, tandem. No one size fits all when it comes to quality bicycles for the road or the trails. If you're interested in any type of bike, see the experts at Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates. Shop in person and online at slippinggears.com.
Do we ever agree on anything?
We both like the Bangor Mall Cinema 10.
The cozy stadium seating.
I like the
the bargain prices for all shows on Tuesday.
Hot buttered popcorn and candy.
The Dolby and digital surround sound is perfect.
I think I'll have a birthday party there for the kids.
I've got two tickets.
I hope one of them's for me.
So we can check out that action movie.
No, romance. Comedy.
At Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Call 942-1303 or visit online at yourneighborhoodtheater.com.
From Fort Kent to Portland, if you need insurance, turn to United. United Insurance is one of the largest independent insurance agencies in Maine, featuring a wide variety of personal and commercial insurance products. Backed by a select group of carriers, United delivers guidance and friendly personal attention. For commercial needs, talk with Pat Gattani or Todd Sosier. For personal auto and home insurance, talk to Navilla Rollins. Call United Insurance 207-385-2077 or online at unitedinsurance.net.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come in and shop our carefully cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders, and experience what has made Bangor Wine a fixture of Bangor's downtown for over 15 years.
Taste our delicious new Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, artisan cheeses, cured meats, and crusty baguettes.
Bangor Wine and Cheese offers the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Drink, eat, live better.
Return to sender. Return to sender.
40 years ago this week, the nation, the world, stunned the death of Elvis Presley at the age of 42. King of rock and roll, who sold more than a billion records in his lifetime and in his afterlife as well, as he still continues to sell records every single year. We talked about his impact and whether it's continuing with Colin Fleming, contributor to a Slate, Sports Illustrated, Rolling Stone, and NPR's Weekend Edition. We got you on here today because it's a very big day. 40 years ago today, the death of Elvis Presley, and I'm so damn old, I actually made that announcement on the air as a young radio guy 40 years ago.
Are you swiveling your hips in the studio today?
Yeah, as always.
Elvis is passing.
I do that as a matter of course anyway, but here we are 40 years later, and there are people out there who ask if Elvis is still relevant, so I ask you that.
I've been hearing that a lot lately, and frankly, I find it kind of irksome. I think it has something to do with Elvis, this notion of him that we know now almost as like the cartoon Elvis, where he's bloated, it's the end of his life, he is at some hockey rink in Indiana, he's singing and handing out scarves to middle-aged women, and it's that fat Elvis notion, that sort of like end of his life crooner that's just lost it. And I think that has trumped, in some people's minds, the reality of what this guy really was at one point, early on in his career, and then later in 1968 with his comeback. But this was a guy we can properly call, I think, a modernist, but a blues modernist, which is a crazy notion, because we think of the blues as like old and dusty, but Elvis had a way of almost like retrofitting Mississippi Delta Loam with like something proto space age. It was unlike anything else you could have heard at the time. And I think that early music from the mid 50s is still unlike anything else you've heard since.
And some of that is included in a brand new box set that's coming out soon of his very early work. And one of the things he did was to take those blues songs, whether it was Arthur Crudup's kind of stuff or Big Mama Thornton, and make it sound not quite blues, not quite country, and then take country music, Blue Moon in Kentucky, and make that sound not quite as country as it was.
I almost think of it as like monorail kind of music. Like, there was a time when Disney World was like so new, monorail, and you think like, wow, what could be like as futuristic as this? And yet it was entirely of its time as well. And I think that's what that early, like, 1953, 54, 55, 56 Elvis is kind of getting at. Now, one of the charges leveled against him these days is that he was appropriating black culture and was some sort of a thief. And I find that silly. The same thing was sort of said about Gene Vincent, Bebopalula. People said, you're just ripping off Elvis. And Elvis went up to Gene Vincent and said, no, man, you're not ripping me off. Just do your thing. You know, if that's what's natural inside of you, that's what you should be going with. And it's what Elvis always went with in those early, especially the pre-fame years.
He was, of course, so different and so distinctive, and certainly for his time, a rebel. But was he a safe rebel, first because he was white, and second because he always had that religious side of him?
No, I don't think he was remotely safe at all. If you watch some of his early television appearances, it's like, oh my God, are you allowed to do this on TV? It is so lascivious that I don't think you could put it on right now. Like, it's still fairly shocking when you see those clips. And as for his gospel music, and he used to claim that he knew every single gospel song ever written. And he wasn't a man, like, given over to boasting either. So there probably was, like, some degree of truth in that. His gospel albums, they rock harder than most secular albums by anybody. By, like, a James Brown, by an early Rolling Stone. So he was always sort of working that blend between the spiritual and the secular. But you could say the same thing about, like, Shane McGowan and the Pogues. And they certainly, you know, were rabble-rousers of a kind. But I think Elvis was, like, the earliest version we have of that. But no, definitely not safe. Not emotionally safe. It was always heavily emotionally invested music. It always felt like the world was at stake. When Elvis was in his prime singing.
When musically do you think it turned for him? Was it when Colonel Parker came along? Was it when he went away to the Army for a while and came back and it was all about the movies?
He roared back from the Army with Elvis Is Back, was his album that came out. And it's one of the finest blues albums of the 1960s. So he was still good at that point. John Lennon maintained that Elvis lost it completely when he was in the Army. But he came out, he was in a lot of bad films that you can see in the middle of the night, like at 3 o'clock. There's always Elvis doing something like Waikiki-wise on some beach with bikini girls. And he lost the plot for a while, but you could always find sort of buried away nuggets on those soundtrack albums. It's like, oh, hey, maybe Elvis is really coming back. And then he came back full bore, of course, in 1968 when he gave those concerts in Burbank in the round, where he's revisiting a lot of that 1954-55 material. And what normally happens for a singer at that point with that much of a gap is that they're on the downside of the hill. But he could still stretch out on songs like Trying to Get to You with more ferocity and more virtuosity than he had even in his Sun heyday. So it was pretty impressive.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. And even after that 68 special, I thought there were, yeah, every once in a while there would be those great moments, whether it was doing a little Tony Joe White song or, you know, even something as kind of hokey as Burning Love or Chuck Berry's Promised Land. He still put some passion into it that might not have otherwise been there with other singers.
From Elvis in Memphis is a great album. I mean, it came out in, what, 1969? And everyone's like, whoa, Abbey Road by the Beatles must be the best album of that year. Like, well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like from Elvis and Memphis could kind of throw with the Beatles' Abbey Road. It's that strong. And he always had that incredibly, like, melismatic sort of range, operatic range to his vocals. That's there in the 1970s. He gave some wonderful concerts in Vegas, which he always kind of had a weird relationship with. And this box set has some, I don't even think you'd call them like concert recordings. They are so early. They are from the Louisiana Hayride radio program. It's like, this is what the term field recordings was invented for. I mean, it sounds like it has been dug out of the earth. Like, it's almost like audio archaeology. But you listen to it, and it's just so primal, but so finessed at the same time. And no one could really do that like he could.
And when you listen to those very early recordings, like That's All Right, Mama, and some of those others done at Sun Records, it sounds like nothing else you will hear. How much of that was Sam Phillips?
I think in terms of the production, like that slapback, like we associate certain sounds with certain bands, certain era. Like you think about like the Factory Records sound that Joy Division was getting in the late 70s. It's highly endemic to Joy Division. That Sun slapback bass sound, that echo, that reverb,
That's very Sam Phillips. I mean, he, I would say, contributed more sonically in terms of just the overall presentation for Elvis than like George Martin did for the early Beatles. Now, that shifted later as they got more involved in the studio. But Elvis would joke, so much reverb on his voice. He would say, I'm under there somewhere. Like, but when you hear the Louisiana Hayride recordings, obviously there's no reverb or anything. It was just those guys in the room. But Sam Phillips was important, and so was the band.
Yeah, Bill Black and those guys, yeah.
Yeah, that Bill Black, those bass lines. And then you have Scotty Moore, and this was obviously before any era of guitar heroes, but he was like an axe master. Some of the lines, and he doesn't solo that often. He's kind of like Pete Townsend in that way. And I think Pete Townsend of The Who absorbed a lot of what Scotty Moore was doing, that you can be like the best guitar player of your decade, and you don't have to be flash, and you don't have to be soloing for 12 bars. It's ornamentation. It's learning how to play off of what the singer is singing. And Scotty Moore was a master at that.
Obviously, one of the things we love to do in popular culture is build people up and then tear them down, but then also rediscover them. Had Elvis lived into a normal age, 70s or maybe even hanging around at 81, 82 years old today, would the appreciation of him as an artist have grown, or would it have been reduced by being out there that long?
I think we have a tendency only to pay attention to things that are put in front of our face these days, rather than go out and seek education on our own, which is a shame, because you'd think, like with YouTube, you could master a lot of Elvis's back catalog like in an afternoon, but people don't tend to do that. I think in terms of Elvis, along the lines of what Phil Spector said, the producer, he said to someone, and this is like back in the 60s or whatever, someone said like Elvis isn't that good. So Elvis was around, and Phil Spector, who had heard some things, said, he's so good, you can't even understand how good he is. And I think, like, you can kind of say the same thing about, I don't know, Wayne Gretzky, like Picasso maybe, Mozart. There aren't a lot of people we can make that claim about. I think Elvis could have morphed into something along the lines of Dylan without the songwriting prowess. So maybe like a Mississippi John Hurt type of figure. And he could have been around to shepherd some of his own legacy into better care, but I don't know. It's sad to me to see that he's so disposable now. When he was doing things as modernistically bold, to my thinking, as what James Joyce was doing, he was a blues modernist.
Is he the most important figure in American pop culture in the 20th century?
That's tough, because you have Louis Armstrong, I mean, from the music strata. You have someone like Duke Ellington, but their work disseminated itself more subtly. And I think with Elvis, if you don't have him, it's like a domino effect. I don't know what other things we might not have. I don't know if we have the Beatles. I don't know if we have everyone who followed from the Beatles. It's almost kind of like a George Bailey, what would your life have been like type of thing. So I think in that sense, the 60s, artistically, musically, as they happened, like a band like 10 years after, that's a reference to when Elvis basically became mainstream. I don't know that that happens without Elvis. And that seems like a pretty big part of our 20th century culture right there.
Well, John Lennon often said before Elvis, there was nothing.
Yes, he measured like everything when his Aunt Mimi was saying, oh, you're never going to be anything by playing a guitar, John. He's thinking like, well, I mean, who's this weird cat like in the American South? This white guy who sounds kind of black, but he's not black, but he doesn't sound white, just sounds like his own thing. Yeah, it must have been like a massive sort of paradigm, like off in the distance for someone like that in their thoughts, in their dreams, in the cultivation of their genius to follow.
Talking a little Elvis with our friend Colin Fleming on Downtown. Colin going to be back with us this next week to discuss the 50th anniversary of the death of Beatle manager Brian Epstein, his impact on the group and everything he did to make them be successful back in the 1960s. That'll wrap it up for this Sunday morning edition of the program. Thanks to Colin Fleming, Charlotte Wilder, John Corrales, and Sean Lash of the Amira Astronomy Center. Speaking of the eclipse, tomorrow on the show, Carrie, we're going to get an in-person live report from the scene from your friend Chris Lane, who will be in North Carolina pretty close to totality.
Yeah, a guy I met down in New Orleans, comedian, actor, and he and some of his friends are heading up to North Carolina to witness the totality of the eclipse.
And so we'll get an in-person report on that tomorrow afternoon. Plus, Alan Adams of The Main Edge with movie reviews, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Mike Lowe of the Portland Press Herald, and whatever else we come up with. You'll want to be here. Promise it'll be fun. Thanks for joining us for your Sunday morning. Casey Kasem, American Top 40, the 80s, coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock right here on Downtown.
Downtown, waiting for you tonight. Downtown, you're gone.